This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good morning, everybody. And I'd like to thank NSA for inviting me to present to you this morning, and thank you for attending. As John said, I'm director at QS Unisolution. You'll be forgiven for not having heard of QS Unisolution, as we were only formed in the middle of last year with the coming together of the QS software business with a company that was established in Germany, based from an international office of a university in Darmstadt. Two guys founded that. They basically created some software to help them manage the international office because they were finding a huge amount of bureaucracy and paperwork involved in doing the number of exchanges they did. So they created some software, and they found that their peers were very interested in this software called MoveOn. And very quickly it became a business, and they gave up their day jobs and started the company. So we came together with them with the background that John's described in QS in terms of running recruitment fairs and publications and research to create QS Unisolution. But as John also said, my passion and my background has really been in technology. I'm a bit of a techie head, and it's probably where my heart lies. And it's really nice to be in this position now where I can bring the two together and see where technology can aid universities in what you're seeking to achieve. And so I want to just keep this session fairly open because, and I know we'll have a chance for questions afterwards, because I don't have a huge amount of experience in the education sector. That's what you bring to the room. The presentation's about engaging international students online, and even in the 2 years that I've, two and a half, nearly 3 years I've been at QS, I've seen a tremendous improvement generally in university websites and university presence online. Just to get a poll, who has a specific area of your website for international students? Excellent, almost everybody. Well, three quarters. Who has an active, somebody in the organisation that you're aware of, somebody in the institution, who is actively working on a search engine optimization to make sure you appear in Google, for instance? Okay, not so many, only probably 20% of the people in the room. But you probably all do appear in Google. In fact, I'm going to show you some statistics in a minute that say how people get to your website, and the vast majority of people will come via search engines, as I'm sure you're aware. Has anyone heard of Baidu? Three, four? B-A-I-D-U, Baidu. Does anyone recruit Chinese students? Who recruits Chinese students? Okay, Baidu has somewhere around 70% of the market for search in China. And if the current contention between... you may have heard that Google is having a slight confrontation, shall we say, with the Chinese authorities over censorship and over some problems they have with hacking, and they're threatening to leave China. What I would just suggest to you is, if you're recruiting students in China, that you become more familiar with the alternatives, because actually Google's got a very small share of the market anyway in terms of Chinese search, and Baidu is the search engine. Just in one example. Anyway, I'm getting a bit ahead of myself. What I'm going to talk to you about is just some of the challenges that we face in terms of international recruitment and sort of setting the scene. And then I'm going to talk about some of the opportunities for your website and also, very much bless you, around using what we call Web 2 or user-generated content or social media. How many people here have a Facebook account? How many people here Twitter? How many people here blog? Okay, the same few hands are going up and getting increasingly less. It's good to see. But actually, again, in the last... I mean, Twitter, 2 years ago, no one in the room would have heard of it. So it's encouraging that even so many of you are at least aware of it. So we can talk about some of those types of opportunities and how you can take advantage. And then I'm going to finally just leave you with some thoughts on, once you've developed that interest, once you've created and engaged the student, how do you convert them into actually turning up to your programs? So just a few facts, and I got these from a report that came out, or there's a series of reports from Noel Levitz, called the E-Expectations. And if you do a search on Google or Baidu, you'll come up with the full report and, or series of reports on this. And this refers to the figure I just mentioned earlier on how many people come to your institution via search engines. Interesting, that's like free marketing. Isn't that great? You know, you can, without having to spend much money, and only, I can't remember how many of you said that that you actually actively engage in search engine optimization, but you're getting people come through. Imagine if you could improve that by 10%, so more people were coming to your site via search engine optimization. It's already responsible for most of the traffic on your site. 70% of students expect institutions to participate. I asked you about your own involvement in Facebook, but how many of you actively have university Facebook pages? Most people, half. Okay. 70% expect you to be there. 50% are happy to converse with you there. There is a phrase that I've heard a few times in the last year or two that from the younger generation that says, email, that's for old people. It's scary. I feel very old when I hear that. But when you look at the stats, it's true. I was just reading a report yesterday that about in the States what teenagers are using, and they spend 10 times more time on social networks than they do on using email. In fact, the average teenager in the States spends 4 minutes a day doing email. It's nothing. So social networks is a way to correspond and be seen, and as I'll show you, some universities are doing it incredibly effectively. 30% of students don't make contact with the institution until they submit their application. That changes the whole recruitment funnel. They're anonymous. In this world, they like to be anonymous. They like to actually, and I'll talk about their influences, but to get more feedback and information from a widening number of sources rather than engaging in a one-on-one with you at the research stage. And it's when they come to submit their application that may be the first time they appear. In fact, the figure's growing, and I've seen some that say as high as 50% don't actually appear in your radar as an individual until they start their application, which puts the pressure on the application process. 23% of prospects say they're likely to drop a score from their list if they can't find the information they need on their website. But a much higher percentage, let me check the number, I think it was something like 72% say they'll be disappointed if they can't find the information on the website. So do you want, you know, the first time that your international students come across your institution for them to be disappointed? It gives a very bad impression. So again, the need to focus on your landing page and the navigation of your site is evident. So who influences your prospective student? Well, at one time, you know, you probably would have had a fairly high degree of influence yourselves on the impression that a student would have had of your institution. But these days, it's a much wider circle of influencers, spheres of influence. And what's very interesting about this selection is that a lot of them are individuals. They're not about a voice of an institution or a media agency or so on. They're about parents and family, about friends, and about total strangers. And that's something that online media has made possible. Certainly, when I, you know, want to travel abroad, I read the stuff from the, you know, from the hotel or in the newspapers about a particular hotel or restaurant or resort. But where do I go? I go to one of the travel sites to actually read what people who've been there say. And that's what we do today. So the challenge for you is how you, as a university, reach all of those different influencers. And the arrow is two ways, because it's no longer about just putting your information out, it's about engaging them in conversation. There are, on the left there, a vast number of different media that are available. And this is some research that was done by Nielsen Company last year. It's states-based, but I think probably compares to consumers in this country fairly well, in who do you trust? And again, what I find interesting is that, as you'd expect, personal word of mouth from people you know is the most trusted source of information. 90% of people trust their their friends, their family, when they tell them something. 70% trust strangers. So it's important that those are your advocates, your ambassadors too. And they are your existing students, your exchange students, your alumni, and the other influences that we just spoke about. Your brand website, which is probably your institution website, is very high up there as well, incredibly important. There's not much on there about the social networks, but clearly they're very important ways of those other voices coming through. So that's some of the ways of getting information out, but what's also important, probably more important than anything, is what are the messages? And you know, the previous speaker talked about benchmarking. What's very important is to understand what your prospective students are looking for. We run benchmarking within QS. We poll around 95,000 prospective students every year based on the people who register for our tours, our fairs around the world, so around 120 events that we run, something like that, every year. And in our master's fairs, which are called the World Grad School Tour, this was the responses in terms of percentage of people who believe these are factors in their choice of institution. There is a very extensive report by country or by region that I'm happy to share with you. Just drop me an email or a tweet and I will send you the URL. Of course, the most important thing is that you segment and target your messages. And there are a huge number of international differences in terms of what students are looking for, based upon who their role models are, their own culture, what's important to them, their values, the value proposition that you heard earlier. But also, the cultural differences, it's about which media they choose to use, currencies and language. Anyone here run websites in languages other than English? Okay, does anyone, that was about 10%, I should think. Does anyone have means of communicating to parents? So, even fewer, very few. Okay, parents we saw were key influencers, and obviously, again, it varies by culture, but very often they're paying in a for a master's course or certainly for an undergraduate course, there'll be influencers. And even if your languages that your talk programmes are in are English, if you want to communicate with the parents for them to understand and recommend you, then the language is very important. Even, this is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but when we correspond with people in the States, we have to think about language. Do you use American English or English English? One of my colleagues from IBM spent some time in the States and he found it quite difficult to make himself understood. He was in Texas, where they have a very strong accent, but some of it was about the actual words. And he was invited to a party where he was told he had to wear suspenders and braces. And he thought it was some kind of Rocky Horror party. In fact, he wrote about his experiences there in a book called The Best of British, and his wife drew the images, and this was one of the images she drew. So let's look at the online opportunities. I believe in the online world, the digital natives that have coming to university now. There are three main things that have changed from 10 years ago. One of them is it's no longer about a monologue. It's about a conversation. People expect this conversation. They're very cynical of the institution voice on its own. So they want to converse with you, and more importantly, they want to converse with a wide number of people. They want consistent messages from the people they're speaking to. So once you've understood your value proposition and you've found the cultural references you're referring to and you understand the media that they're using, it's making sure the voices are consistent. And I chose this image because it's about online and offline. And it's about making sure those voices are consistent between the two. And then it's also, I think, the third big change is what I mentioned earlier about this anonymity. a word I always find difficulty saying, the fact that very many people are doing their research without giving you a valid email address. In fact, I think the research that that came from said that only 34% will give you an email address that they regularly use pre-application process. So all those wonderful email addresses you're harvesting and sending out your email campaigns to, they're not using them. Of course, that's a generalisation. The other thing that this means is that what they refer to as the summer melt is increasing. People are actually seeing more people start applications. Well, I guess in the past you didn't know who started an application. You maybe knew how many application forms you printed, but you certainly didn't know how many people started writing on them. Now you know, because most of your application processes are online. Although in my studies I found quite a few universities that still are not online for all of their international applications, or not fully online. So they're asking people to download a Word file or a PDF, fill it in, scan it, or upload it, which means you lose sight of that. And this is such a critical phase of the process. But because you're getting more people starting an application, and you need to manage and filter the best applicants through the application process so that you're engaging them and seeing them through to enrolment. I'm going to just refer very quickly to a few of the key media because I know that we're short of time. I normally do this presentation in about 2 hours, so I'm trying to keep it down. There are some really good sites out there. You know, 2 years ago, I struggled to find a good university website. There is two things I'd point out to you. If you're looking for inspiration and looking for templates, edustyles.net run an annual award. Actually, this was their second year of running an award. And this was one of their winners the website for recruitment. I know some people who have separate pages for international recruitment, which is even better. But they've got some really good examples, even some before and afters. And what I really like about this is very specific, grabs you visually, things to do, things that matter at any point in time. This main image changes every time you load it, and you can go through it. Quick guides and just links to the things that really matter. Clear, simple, and a search box. I forget the number offhand, but however you structure your site, there is a majority of people, when they're looking for something, they won't read any of the text, they'll type something in your search box. So does your search box work is an extremely important factor. There's a really good facility, a website.grader.com, that will analyse your website. It'll analyse it in terms of what's on the website itself, but also in terms of what links to it, whether you've got blogs, whether you've got forms. And I've done a few, I was given some advance information of who would be here, and generally some of the UK universities turn out extremely well. But have a look, and it's a really good site. It's free, and it will point out some of the weaknesses and strengths of your site. How do they find your site? Search engines, number one way. But how on search engines? 41% will actually enter the school name. 35% will be looking for a word or phrase. And what's increasingly happening is those words or phrases are getting longer. I don't know if anyone's heard of the term the long tail of search. But what that means is when people are looking for something very specific, a program in a particular country or region about a particular subject with particular criteria, they'll type long things into the search box. You know what your offerings are. You know what your value propositions are. Check whether you come up when people search for those things. Because the conversion rate for the long tail is much better than the conversion rate for a simple search. If I'm just searching for a master's in finance, I'll get thousands of hits. If you're one of them, that's great. The chances of someone who sees you on there actually coming to your university is low. If someone searched for a master's in finance specializing in entrepreneurial, international currency conversion, I don't know, whatever it happens to be, and they've typed that all in and in London or whatever, and you come up, then the chance of that person coming to university is significantly higher. Long-tail search is fairly self-evident. Links from higher education sites, so links from the portals, the hubs, very important. And, of course, making sure that your printed material contains your URL. Just an example of an industry hub. Oh, it's one of ours. MoveOnNet. Something like 5,000 universities in this hub. Do you know what? Primarily, this isn't about the students. This is about finding partners. This is about ways of finding the institutions that you want to have exchanges with and managing those exchanges, which, again, they become your ambassadors for your programs. International students become your conduits. International rankings. The QS World University rankings on the website is a massive draw, approaching 5 million visitors to this site last year. And you will be featured, but also you can have your own, I forget the name of it now, but come and sit on the stand and we'll tell you you can have a full description of your university on there as well, and also advertising. But then the most important thing is don't dance on your own. If you're particularly a middle-aged bad dancer like me, the internet is not the place to be on your own. It's the place to surround yourselves with good-looking young people. And you do that through user-generated content. There's a huge number of sites, facilities out there. Know your audience, pick the ones that matter. They fall into these kind of categories, and I'll just refer to a few of them very quickly now. Blogs. Another EduStyle winner. Anyone here from Imperial College? No? Incredible site. Take a look at it if you want to be inspired in terms of blogging. Not only is it graphically very good, and you can pull on the string and you can see all different current students, and they're actually currently blogging. I don't know how they find the time to do it. These are third-year students very often in master's programs, and they're writing extensive essays about their lives. If I was a student going, you know, looking at university, I would want to know what the current students are doing and, again, get that voice. And you can converse with them. They also have staff blogging. So you want to know what's going on in the recruitment office, you know, at particular points of the recruitment cycle. You want to know what's going on in the international office. You can hear about it firsthand. It's a different voice. It's not the institution voice. It's a personal voice. Incredibly powerful. And I saw some of you are blogging, but follow blogs. Blogs are an incredible way of keeping up, you know, when you're not at this kind of facility, with what's going on in the industry in various countries. Make a list of those. Finished, good. Or just make a list of that one, which is a list of the blogs. Just bloghighed.org. And, of course, Facebook. There is some talk about Facebook replacing websites, that you don't need to have a website anymore because you can do it all online. Is Coventry here? Fantastic Facebook page. Well done, Coventry. I'm afraid this is slightly old because I did this for an old presentation. I know it's improved even since then. But what's really great is that everything's on there. You know, the news is on there, the links to, and you can't even see it, all of the pages on your own site is there. A lot of rich media. There's images. There's, in fact, just go down. What's going on, you know, and this is where the students are, the prospective students are. Fantastic site. And I know more and more of you are doing it, and that's where students are looking. So they're looking to support the information they get from your website via these kind of services. Be aware, depending where you're recruiting from, though, it may not be Facebook. Facebook is light blue in colour, and what you'll see on this, sorry, dark blue in colour. It's the one. The favourite in the UK. But wherever you're recruiting, there will be a different, or may well be a different, primary social network. And so be aware, particularly even in Europe, and again, this is now slightly old, but it's updated regularly. Have a look at oxyweb.co.uk, and you'll see the latest list. And pick the social networks that are appropriate, because you may have done a great job with Facebook, but that, if that's not where your international student is, that's not of much value. I know I'm running out of time, so I don't want to dwell, but Twitter has a different purpose. Twitter is very much about what's going on currently. It's completely different from Facebook. Nobody has to be your friend in order to see your tweets. And your tweets have to be very crisp, very specific. But it is very effective if you want to know what's going on at any point in time. And certainly if I was about to go to university and I was an international student, I'd keep my ear to the ground in terms of what current students or other prospective students are doing and want to hear from them. It's also exceptionally good for networking amongst ourselves. There's some really good, again, bloggers or tweeters, and the site to go for to find that is twibes.com. Group Higher Ed, and you'll find, I think it was 900 last time I looked, tweeters from the higher education community sharing their thoughts. Rich media. Rich media has so much value in portraying specific types of messages. So if you want to talk about your environment, you could write long essays about it, you could put up a photograph, or you could show a video. I know which one would be the most effective and the quickest way of capturing a university. And there are some fantastic YouTube videos out there. Anyone here actually made a YouTube video or a video for your website? And is it used? Is it viewed? Effective? I mean, incredibly powerful. You know, and there are some really good sites out there. And again, Sheffield Hallam, I think, are here. Fantastic. You've got your own YouTube page and lots of activity going on it, and individual students talking about their accommodation, international pages as well. Really very, very good. Coventry done something, again, they're on YouTube as well, but also they do podcasts. And podcasts have some specific value too, in that it's the way to reach your target audience when they're asleep or when they're not able to reach a PC screen. But very important to remember, and I've made the university in this instance anonymous. They may be here. Be very careful. Whatever you put on YouTube or other people are putting on YouTube, it attracts comments. And you might have spent a lot of time and energy and effort creating a really fantastic campus tour, as this university did. It's a really nice campus tour. And then the comments that come underneath it is, a friend of mine got a job where they showed her a list of unis they won't employ people from. This university was the worst. This was for design courses. So if you intend to work in product design, avoid this university. Just finish at this university. Do not go. Very expensive. It's truly appalling. Those that read this, go anyway and message me when you regret it. And another one that came underneath it was, well, time's almost up. I've got to decide what to do. I've got till 6 p.m. to decide. Should I go here or should I go somewhere else? And there was a whole load of responses. Now, you need to be aware that that's going on and ideally participate. I mean, this student could have been influenced at the right time by the right communication. But these students, this is still the top remark 6 months ago. If someone from the university could just see this, they could do two things. If it's their own website, if it's their own video, they can delete the remark. If it's not on, if it's just a student doing it, what you should do is encourage your fans to add their comments. Drown out the detractors. That's the perceived wisdom in this kind of environment. There are lots of, you know, you say, well, how am I possibly going to monitor all those videos out there? It's not that difficult. They're free, they're tools, Google Alerts, Video Alerts, Yotify. There's a wide range of those that will, you can put in your keywords and it will tell you when those keywords occur and you can go and view the comments. Certainly within 6 months you can respond. So finally, what do you do once you've attracted someone? Well, as I said, up till now it's been a bit like a speed date. It's anonymous. It's about engaging. It's about attracting. Now you want to get to know the people. You need to understand them. So you must make sure on your website you've got a really good form that isn't going to put people off and capture the information. When you've got the information, you need to follow through with it and eventually get them to fill in an application form. But most importantly, what's behind, and this from a marketing point of view is a marketer's dream, because you now know the person in detail. You can really target your messages. And if you can identify the best students or the best prospective students, you can be you can put your resources into that and converting that one into a student that turns up at your gate. And the way to do that is with CRM. And it doesn't really matter, I shouldn't say that, what CRM you use, but use CRM. CRM, standing for Customer Relationship Management, or in your case, Candidate Recruitment Management. It's about understanding each individual that you're dealing with and making sure that you're building a communication that works with them. It's also about the feedback loop and so on as well, but this is just an example from Top Apply, which I'm happy to talk to you on the booth about. So that's really what I wanted to say to you today. Thank you for your attention, and be very pleased to talk to you now or at the booth, or email me or follow me on Twitter. Thank you.